Bootstrapped Web. We're back. Jordan, how's it going, buddy?
Hello, Brian. Nice to speak with you.
All right. So back at it after a couple of weeks. You know, I know lately, you know, we haven't been as consistent about the podcast as we usually have. I've been getting, you know, some emails and tweets here and there, you know, expecting the episode to drop every single Thursday. But, you know, look, it's just not going to happen every Thursday. You and I are both, you know, very busy, obviously running our businesses and families and travel and all that. But when we are both at home ready to do this on, we record on Fridays. Yeah, we can get one out there. So excited to kind of catch up.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, today's Friday. I'm heading out to San Diego on Sunday for Traffic and Conversion. That's a digital marketer's big conference. And it's freezing here in Portland. This was like the first real week of winter, and San Diego sounds just about right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. I've always heard a lot of good things about that one. I've never made it to Traffic and Conversion.
I haven't been to that one. I went to Digital Marketer's like smaller one that's more focused on e-commerce a few months ago, and just got a ton of value out of it. And the content a little bit, but the networking was so good. And just talking directly to people who use our product and talking to agencies who want to get their customers. So I've after that experience in the smaller version, I thought absolutely we need to be there for the bigger one. And we're actually in the middle of courting like an enterprise customer, and they're going to be there also. So it'll be cool to, like, you know, go have a beer and talk and just form that relationship. I have found myself traveling more, and I have found myself making that offer more often for larger customers. So one of our customers is in Uruguay, and I might go visit them. I mean, right? It's a big enough account that it's worth it, and you know, I'm down for Uruguay. I haven't been down there before.
That's awesome. You know, that's interesting. I was just talking to Nathan Barry over on my other, the Productize podcast. By the way, that's a really great episode. Probably for this audience, I think you would really enjoy it. The nice thing about talking to someone like Nathan is that, like, everybody listening, most people listening already know him and know his story. So I don't really have to cover any of that. I could just dive right into the good stuff. Talked all about ConvertKit. And he said, you know, now, you know, at ConvertKit's size, like, we were talking a lot about his outbound sales approach and, you know, how he did that pretty heavily early on to grow. But even today they're doing it, but it's more for those larger accounts and getting on planes and going for those, you know, big name accounts. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm a big Jason Lemkin fan. If you don't follow him on Twitter, he is among the best. And he talks about that a lot, the enterprise sales and what getting onto an airplane and going to visit your customers can really do. I'm so excited that large enterprise customer wants us to come to their office in Colorado to talk more specifics on tech. So I'm going to fly out our VP of engineering, Rock, from Slovenia. And I think that's going to be such a cool experience for both of us to be able to go there and visit a customer at their office and then be able to kind of do the business side for me. And the tech side for him, it would just kind of be a good experience for the company to just be able to do that for the first time and then be able to do better the next time.
That's great. Yeah, speaking of travel, oh man, I am such an idiot. So last week, all right, I wasn't even going to talk about this because it just sucked so bad. But last week on Friday, my wife and I were supposed to get away and go down to Belize for a long kind of weekend trip. And of course, it's the night before, just a few hours away from an early morning flight. And I realized my passport is expired.
Yeah. And Belize is a different country, my friend. You need a passport.
Apparently, it is a different country. So, it's one of those things where I booked the trip kind of like on a whim a few months earlier. And it was around like, you know, November, December holiday time. I was like, I'm going to, you know, surprise my wife and do this trip. And had a bunch of cash come in. I was like, let's do this trip. It'll be great. And I spent like a day or two, you know, booking the flight, booking the hotel, getting all the transfers together, getting it all done. And this is how I am with trips and with anything that's like non-work related. I'm like, all right, let me just do it, put it away, file it away, and then not touch it again until the day comes. And that's exactly what happened. It was like, I didn't think twice about like, oh, is my passport, is like the 10-year expiration date happened to come up the week before this freaking trip? So yeah.
Damn. No Belize for you?
Well, we're going to go like, you know, 3 weeks from now. So, you know, I had to
all right.
rebook a bunch of stuff, spend a bunch of extra money on it. And yeah, that all sucked, but we are going to go do it. So my mom was, you know, came here to watch our kids while we went away. So we kind of booked my mom for the weekend to do that. So she, you know, she still did it. And so Amy and I booked a last minute trip up to Vermont instead. I went snowboarding and we just did that. So, yeah.
All right. Could be worse.
Yep.
I too have done that once, going to the Grand Cayman Islands with my wife and my best friend from high school and his wife, and they were already there, and we had to call them and say, so you guys are on your own this weekend. We actually went to the airport to the security line and then had them say, oh, you can come in. Yes.
And I was so close to doing that too. I mean, luckily, I did try to check in online when I got the notification on the phone, like the night before. I was like, all right, let me just check in online. And I don't always do that. Like sometimes I just do it at the airport, but I did that. And then that's when I realized the passport was expired. Luckily, otherwise we would have gone at like 5 a.m. to the airport.
That would have hurt.
Ugh.
Well, yeah. Look, I'm going to give you some credit for finding it, booking it ahead of time, thinking about your family and your wife. So good for you. It'll be a few weeks. No big deal.
Yeah. And it was actually really good conditions for once up in Vermont. So I had a nice snowboarding weekend. But then, yeah, since then, you know, back at it. Been doing a lot of, getting a lot of good things up and running and launched and wheels turning on a bunch of good stuff. So where should we dive in?
Yeah, I guess we can do some quick updates and then some specific things that are coming up and things we're thinking about. I have some questions for you. I have some things like we're now rolling out a lot more features a lot more often, and I don't really have a good system for how to keep people updated on it. You know, you don't want to, if we add 3 features in a week, what do you send 3 different emails? Do you send
you mean to customers email? Or like, yes. Like your audience? Yeah.
To prospects and customers. Yeah. Right. So
yeah.
That,
I mean, I'm terrible about that too with the SaaS.
We went for a long time without that many new features. And so I'll talk about that in a sec. So that's one of the issues. Just thinking about the conference next week is kind of an interesting topic of like, okay, what would you do and what should I do ahead of this conference? I always laugh at myself that I don't have business cards. You know, it's like 3 years in and everyone, whenever you go to a conference, I was like, can I get a card? And I just have to be like, no.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally the same way. I'm like that guy. Like, yeah, just, I don't know, Google my name or something.
Yeah, just email or something. Yeah. But you know, if you're actually going there to try to close business and form partnerships, maybe, yeah. I mean, is that a thing? Do you actually need the card? You don't need the card.
Honestly, you know, and I'll get a bunch of people's cards and I always just throw them out.
You just throw them out. I just, yeah. So anyway, so it's like little things like that. So like what to do with conferences. And then the other thing is, so Mr. Rob Walling, thank you, sir. He asked me to speak at MicroConf. And so that's like the initial euphoria of, oh my God, I'm so special. Awesome. He asked me, you know, it's very exciting. And then you say yes, because you have to say it's such a great opportunity. And then all of a sudden it's, well, shit, what am I going to talk about? And then it gets into that. It's like, I'm scared. I'm not good enough. And then it goes back into the, wait, hold on. Maybe I could talk. So that whole.
And you're, thing, and you're speaking at growth, right?
Yes. Which is even more pressure. And I'm like, so I want to talk about what I'm doing to try to prepare for it. And one good resource that I found for it. And then maybe we can talk about the topic that I have in mind and just kind of just talk through it and see if it's kind of interesting enough or if it's just a micro topic.
So yeah, that's, definitely. That's
things on my side. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, basically the two main things that are going on. So productize that whole side of my business, my personal site and the productize course. That's really been my focus for like all of January and February so far. And it's probably going to continue to be my focus for a while. I thought it would be a temporary kind of 1 month spurt, but it's turning into a much just longer term thing. I could talk a bit about that. Actually, right now, this weekend, there's like a one-time opening of Productize, which is going pretty well so far, but it'll be closed by the time that this publishes. And then the other big thing that's on my mind is like a big renewed focus into Ops Calendar. I got some really good feedback on that during the 2 big SnowTiny comps that I went to. And I'm just thinking through some questions on the development side, the development team side of things, and some of the marketing and sales stuff for it. Really, those are just more like open questions that I've yet to really dive into and, you know, get your feedback on it.
Cool. All right. So why don't I kick things off? Talk a quick update on things on the product, and then we can talk about how that's related to keeping customers and prospects updated so you get the full value out of these new releases. So we have been working on like the biggest update to the app in a long time. It's a complete switch in infrastructure in our live pages, the pages that actually get published, the checkout pages, upsell pages, and thank you pages. So those were built in Angular. It made things difficult. First, it made the load time slow, which is not acceptable in a checkout product, right? So that we had to address. The other thing is that it was making tracking in JavaScript difficult, right? So I have a limited understanding of exactly why and the actual underlying reasons. But anyway, these were the issues. So we decided to...
So like if people want to put like a Facebook pixel on the success page kind of thing, like they can't do that?
Yes. And we allow for JavaScript on our pages. But because of Angular, the way it was loading and in the order which they were... Like people had to do a lot of gymnastics to make it work instead of just copying and pasting, which is how it should be, especially for non-technical marketers, which is who our product is aimed at. We did this project. It was effectively like a re-platform, which is usually a disaster. And it was a semi-disaster in just in how long it took.
I have a question about that because like this is part of what I'm trying to think through with Ops Calendar. Now, I definitely don't want to do any sort of rebuild anytime soon, but... It was built in Angular. Did you go to something else?
Yeah, we flipped it over to Laravel. So it's just straight HTML and CSS. So it's a lot faster and loads in an expected way for the JavaScript.
So, I mean, my question there then is like, does that mean that you literally had to go through the list of all the features that you've already had up and running and just rebuild them? Like redo all those features?
No-ish. So some... Yes, but not all. Now, so that's directly related to like the situation we're in. For a long time, that project, that was the most important project. The reason it was the most important project, not only is it because it was going to address the speed issue, which is what we needed. The other thing is so many features are dependent on it that we were holding off because we didn't want to build and then a month later rebuild. So it turned into the situation of like 2-3 months of just really not many features coming out because we kept waiting on the larger update. And so that was really frustrating.
I know that like you and I are both non-technical founders and Ops Calendar is built in Laravel and Vue.js. I don't think that was a wrong choice. I'm happy with it, but the Vue side of things has definitely been slowing down. I mean, literally slowing down the app, but slowing down our progress, especially when the Vue library was outdated and it took like a month for my developer to get it updated and get the whole app. He's still in the progress of that, of like fixing all the features that broke when we updated Vue, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really frustrating.
It's frustrating. And the second you have any sort of momentum and people using it, it gets infinitely more complicated because now you're fixing a train that's left the station. This thing is in motion. A year ago, when we made updates, it was, sorry, guys, you know, to the 20 people using it. And now with hundreds and you know, all the money process, it's just scary. Everything's scary. So we've reverted to a system where we don't make big updates for the entire group. We first have an early access, like a beta group, that we reach out to and we say, do you want to be part of this beta for this specific feature? And they say yes or no, it's up to them. And then we've built in the mechanism on our end to have a flag to just say, yes, this feature is live for this person. So now the approach is instead of going from staging to production, it goes from staging to production, but nobody sees it. And then from production, but nobody seeing it, to just making it available to the beta users that said yes. So now it went from staging to production with nobody to now production with 4, 5, 6 people. And then once it gets fleshed out, then it goes production to everybody. So it's like much more careful in the implementation and in the release, just because we have to be more paranoid. So now that this thing got released, it went to early access 3 weeks ago. And then it went live to everybody yesterday. So it went, I mean, all in all, really smoothly. The early access was not smooth, but that's why it's early access. And then this one went smooth and, you know, maybe a few hours of kind of debugging and fixing and getting some feedback. And there's still a few lingering things, but overall for such a huge update, it was really well done. So now we have this mountain. We have like 15, 20 features that are going to be released in the next 2 weeks that are like kind of like ready to go, but have been waiting. I want to get the full value out of it, the full marketing value to make our customers happy, make our customers more successful, and also to let prospects know about these new features. We're just starting that process. We don't really have a good way to do it other than we have what we say two different types of feature releases. A feature release that does warrant marketing and a feature release that doesn't. And so if a feature release warrants marketing, then it gets written up in a blog post, written up in a support doc, and then it gets put into an email that goes out to everybody.
There was a great, I think we talked about this, a great episode of Seeking Wisdom, the podcast Seeking Wisdom, David Cancel, and they were talking about that. It was a couple months back, but the marketing and engineering is totally aligned. And they ship stuff every single month, and it's like, okay, the ship date is both when the feature goes live and the blog post, newsletter, webinar, like whatever's happening to market this new thing, it's in lockstep with pushing it live.
Everything we do on that side has marketing and promotion in mind. So it's just, what's this feature? Is it market worthy? That's been working over the past few weeks as we release stuff, but now all of a sudden the speed at which we're releasing things is accelerating that system feels antiquated. That's like, what are we going to send out an email every 2 days? Right? Or do we start to send out an email that is like, what's new in CardHook and has maybe two things or four things or six things, depending on how many things have been released? And then do we write a blog post for every single one? Maybe we do, and then we come back and write blog posts later for the ones that aren't as market worthy. It's like everything gets a support doc, but so this is like this weird problem over the next few weeks of how do we get the most value out of these?
Yeah, so you have a lot of stuff that's shipping rapidly. That's awesome. So I would just like if every week or every 2 weeks there's like a bunch of stuff that went live, just kind of batch the top three or four into a one email update and blog post and just make the coolest thing the headline, the subject line.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
I've seen a few SaaS do that. Like I get updates from like Help Scout and a couple other ones that I'm a customer of. And like even Help Scout, I guess they're redoing their beacon feature pretty soon. And they, like the founder did a blog post ahead of the launch. I think the thing is not, they're kind of like building it right now. But they like laid out like their vision for this new thing.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things we're weak at in terms of building anticipation. So we kind of look internally and we get stressed internally about when is this coming out, or when is it ready, and we don't talk ahead of time. And then we're like, okay, it's finally ready, and then we talk about it. Where in reality, we should be building some anticipation. I think generally speaking, what we're experiencing is that we need ways to communicate more easily and quickly with our customer base. And it's like, that's why I'm starting to look at like, maybe we need a Facebook group, man. Maybe it's time for a Facebook group. So I always think of ClickFunnels because they did it so incredibly well. Russell, their founder, would just turn on his phone and just say, hey guys, got this new stuff for you. Check out this screenshot. Look what we're doing. Can't wait to release it. Just these informal 90-second videos goes up on the Facebook page, gets 500 likes and shares and excitement. And then the feature comes out, it's like, it's much better.
Brennan has been doing a really, really good job with that, with Right Message. He's got a Right Message Facebook group. I don't know how he does it. He's literally every single day, he's posting something to the Facebook group.
Like screen share videos, right?
Screen share videos. Like, I mean, him and his team are just cranking on Right Message. Like they're shipping stuff every single day, but not just features. Like here's an explainer video that we just did, or like, the team and I were just whiteboarding something. Here's a photo of the whiteboard, like just stuff like that, just throwing it all out there, you know?
Right. It is a reorientation with your relationship and how open you are, how transparent. And we have not done that. I don't think I'm good at it, but it seems like a muscle we need to build if we want to generate like a larger community with more heat. Yeah, I spoke with Brennan 2 days ago, which we had a good laugh about our mastermind what, 5 years ago. I don't know, four years ago
when we met. Yeah,
when we first met. That's right.
That's right.
It was great to kind of reminisce on that. But I feel like I need to study what people like him and Russell Brunson and these guys do that are just better at it, and then I need to come out of my comfort zone and start doing it.
Totally. I've been completely eating up Russell Brunson stuff. I'll talk about that when I get to the product type stuff.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I'm very interested in that because it's different worlds colliding. At least in my head, there's like the SaaS world, and then there's like the marketer world.
Yeah, he really kind of, you know, his feet in both of those worlds for sure. But
I mean, they're doing so well. It's crazy. I think they're at like 125,000 paying customers or something like that.
This is insane. Insane. Oh my God.
I wouldn't be surprised if they get scooped.
Yeah.
I would love that, baby. Yep.
You know, I talked a couple of months ago about, on my mind has been this idea of like community marketing and having, whether it's a Facebook group, a Slack group, like some private area for maybe one for paying customers, one for audience, like inner circle audience people, free but private. And the productized community has started to really pick up. Like it's pretty active now. I've got a Slack group, I've got a forum, and that's for paid members. I am more active in it now than I was before. But like I want to put more stuff out there, and more like raw, rough things out there. I don't publish things until it's like done or you know,
or polished or
like
okay, so let me just try something. Is it that the people who are better at the transparency, it's that they open up to the process? They show the process thing. Of what they're working on, as opposed to, okay, I have worked on this in private. It is finished and it's now ready for you.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
the right angle on it?
Well, like different guys do it differently. Like Justin Jackson is just super active on like 1,000 different social networks. And I think his thing is just more about like he engages his people. Like he's constantly asking questions and throwing a thought experiment out there and all that kind of stuff. Brennan is more about the process, I think, and just putting out like, here's something that's like almost finished. Take a look before we actually really push it out there or get your feedback on that. Yeah. I tend to just kind of put finished ideas and concepts and articles and videos and podcasts out there after I've worked on them. But there's so much that I work on. Like the past couple of weeks, I've been deep in automation workflows and just setting up all these different marketing funnels and behind the scenes stuff that I'm like, man, somebody should see what I'm working on.
It's like we're not getting the full value of what we're working on because we're keeping it to ourselves. That's really what it is.
Yeah. And, but you know, a lot of it is pretty complex. Not that people wouldn't understand it, just that I'm afraid if I hit record on a screencast to share it out real quick, I'll end up spending an hour on the freaking screencast, you know? But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I do want to just get more stuff out there.
Yep. The community marketing thing. It's already come up, twice in the past two episodes. So we'll see where that goes. All right. So that's my product update along with that new problem of how do we communicate better?
Yep. Cool. So over to the productize brand side of things, if you will. I did finish the rebrand of my site. It's no longer cashjam.com. Now it's productizeandscale.com. Same site, same blog and everything, same newsletter. It's just now it's called that. Got a new logo on it and all that fun stuff. Productizecourse.com is where the course actually lives. And then there's the Productize podcast. So it's now it's all kind of connected under one banner. And so got all that out the door a couple of weeks ago. And the plan this year for the Productize product is to have it basically be closed all year long. And I'm only opening it maybe like once a month, once every 2 months, something like that. I just finished creating an all new webinar presentation and I presented that live a couple days ago. And so this weekend, right now, as we record, it's one of those, it's actually the first opening of the new Productize course. I already released it to previous members. So they've had access, been getting some pretty good feedback on it.
So this is the first run.
First run of new customers buying the new Productize. Also, the price is slightly higher now than it was before. experimenting with different things. Like before you get lifetime access, now you get a year access. And then after that, you have an option to continue with like a membership model. This weekend, what I did was I promoted this new live webinar to my existing list. So I had a few hundred people on the webinar yesterday, which went really well. And I mean, I was literally finishing up these slides like minutes before the live webinar. And like, I'm just like, I've said it before, it never ceases to amaze me. Live webinars, I spent several weeks putting all the pieces together and the emails and it's still a scramble. And I found out that like, it must have been 15 minutes before start time that the buy button was not working.
Oh, perfect.
And I was like freaking out. It took me a little while to figure it out. I realized something. It's a new membership system. So I got it all squared away like a couple of minutes before. But yeah, got that squared away. And even like after the webinar, I was still writing the emails that are queued up to go out over the weekend. So I was just really just down to the wire on
it. Look, one of the best things about events is that they force you
totally
to doing things.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I spent a lot of time building automation so that when I run this thing again, it's literally just going to be like press a button and the whole thing just goes, you know. So speaking of Russell Brunson, part of the plan, the marketing plan for the productized stuff is basically this year I decided to really try to follow his recent book, the system that he lays out there.
Yeah. Perfect webinar.
Yeah. The perfect webinar system, basically. So the
value stack.
Yep. I think this might be like the first time that I really followed somebody else's system. So step by step, like, let me just do everything that he's
right. Let's just, as the starting point.
Yeah. Like, you know, I've taken a lot of ideas from a lot of people and adapted them in different ways. And a lot of things have worked pretty well, but it's always been like, you know, let me just throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and kind of see what sticks. And so the whole concept of like, you know, I've done a lot of webinars in the past and I would always just kind of come up with something, like just teach a bunch of stuff that I think is valuable and then lead into a pitch. But the way that Russell teaches it in his system and in the book, what is it called? It's not .com secrets, the new expert secrets is the
new one. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Let's get into this. It's a great opportunity while it's fresh in your mind.
What I really love about the way that he put it together is that he gets much deeper into the psychology. It's not just like this is how you functionally set up a marketing funnel. We kind of know how that stuff works now. You could figure that out with any tool. What I really like about how he teaches it is he gets into the psychology of these are the things that you need to square up and frame up in a very specific sequence so that you get the person to resonate with a story and like meet you where you experienced this like aha moment and then how that led into, you know, the solution. And when he lays out the perfect, as he calls it, the perfect webinar presentation, he's literally going slide by slide and kind of laying out like the psychology under why the pitch and the sales script and even the educational script is structured in the way that he does it. And it's also like not like, okay, literally take my words and use it and it will work in this way. It's teaching the concept. And so I was able to write copy and slide and design the slides in my style, but still leveraging the same sequence of the story and all that.
So is it generally the same approach of, you know, having some open loops in the beginning and establishing your credibility and then providing value and then showing how they'll be able to do it also and kind of, is it kind of as expected that way?
What he lays out is basically like, you want to identify three secrets. So you're going to learn in this webinar the three secrets to, you know, productizing your service, delegating to a team so that you don't do everything yourself, streamlining your sales. Like you figure out like three key benefits of the product that you're selling and the key pain points of why those things are so painful to solve. You do teach a bit about the concept of how they can be solved, but it's more about telling a story of how you discovered the solution to this long-held frustration kind of thing. And then those same three secrets are then directly tie into the thing that you're pitching as like the solution or the how, you know. And yeah, it's a good book. I mean, I read through it and then I went back through it as I was creating the webinar and took a ton of notes, just writing out copy as I went through the book, it was kind of thing where I'll read a chapter and then I like write some marketing copy and then go back and write some more copies. It was good.
I have a webinar scheduled for March 7th. So maybe I'll go refresh. I looked at the perfect webinar maybe 6 months ago, maybe a year ago even. And I did find a great YouTube video of Russell kind of explaining the whole thing.
His specific example is like he uses him selling ClickFunnels, the SaaS, as the prime example. So it even applies more to what you're doing. Eventually, I'll probably try it on Ops Calendar, but I was using it to sell the productize course and community, and so I had to kind of adapt it for that. But
so that's this weekend?
Yeah, that's going on right now. So I promoted that to my existing subscribers. I wasn't sure how it would go over sales-wise because, you know, I know that there are a lot of people who've just been on my list for a while, and even some people who've already bought Productize came to the webinar. So like I wasn't really sure. And I'm actually still a little bit unsure. Sales yesterday and today actually were pretty good, and I'm expecting a few more through the weekend when it closes down on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, I'm not unhappy with the results. It wasn't like the explosive launch that I've seen with other launches that I've done. And I think that's mainly because it's mostly people it's not a lot of brand new people. They've kind of seen it. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing the same thing, but only to paid traffic. So I'm going to be running ads to get completely cold audiences into it and kind of see how that goes. Yeah.
A different test.
Yeah, yeah. So I've actually already set up all the ads for that, and that's scheduled out to go next week. That'll be kind of like the real test, and we'll see where that goes. And then I'm still working out other things on that front, like new lead magnets, new kind of global like content stuff, free content, free videos, a free private Facebook group, which I haven't launched yet, but I want to get this stuff going. And I'm just starting to spend a lot more time and effort and resources on the productized side of things, because it's a really good product that continues to sell. It's a significant part of my income, and B, I mean, the audience, like that's what is sending all the activity into my other products, Audience Ops, Ops Calendar, even getting feedback about tools like Ops Calendar and stuff like that, like coming from that audience, coming from the community. I mean, it's just so valuable. So I'm literally starting to see like the daily benefits of having like an active Slack group of members and stuff like that. So, you know, the more I'm able to invest time in it, the more it pays off clearly. And the more that I'm able to give members and make it more of like a community rather than just a course kind of thing.
Yeah. And the fact that it drives leads into the other parts of the business too is just gravy. So certainly sounds like it makes sense to keep focusing on it. All right, let's see what else we got going on here. Well, I guess we can kind of lump conferences into the same thing. So next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm going to a conference. What I've been trying to think about is what's the right approach to this? So the first thing I think about is just the social interactions. So what I did was I got in touch with someone that I know is pretty like well-connected in that scene. And I said, what are you doing, you know, Sunday night for dinner? And he said, actually, I'm hosting like a VIP dinner and I'll hook you up with some discounted tickets. You know, you'll meet, here's like three or four people that'll be there. Got invited to that. And then Sid, who used to run marketing over at Lemon Stand, which is an e-commerce platform, is now consulting for us on Carthook. So I know he's going to be there, so I invite him. And then this is the serendipity of going to live events. Sid emails me back and says, actually, I know someone from, you know, high up in Shopify that's going to be there. Should I invite him to dinner? And then I say, yes, obviously. Now all of a sudden going to dinner with someone from Shopify and making connections for Sid. It's like, okay. So the social piece of it is clearly like the most powerful. I feel comfortable not having like this crazy agenda. I just want to just do as much hanging out and socializing as possible. The last time I went a few months ago, we were pretty surprised. I was pretty surprised. I was with Ben. We were surprised that a lot of people knew about what we were doing. So now that I feel more comfortable in that fact, like, okay, so now if my assumption is when we went there, we were kind of like, no one's going to know who we are except some people who are in our niche and that's it. And what we learned was, oh, that's totally wrong. most people in the space just are aware of all these different tools. And even though they're not using our product, they're aware of it. So now going into this, I'm trying to say to myself, okay, assuming that fact, I think I can be a little more aggressive in terms of we're building up our agency program and here's what we do. And we'd like to list you as an agency and here's what we do for you and here are the features and here's the right person on my team to get in touch with. So now I have like a clearer version of our sales process, which is...
Is that a thing that you guys are actively doing?
Yes. Yes. So one of our like marketing experiments that we want to focus on over the next month is building out a partner program. So we don't know if it's going to work, but it is definitely worth some effort to see as an experiment. So what we're doing is we're trying to think, okay, what can we offer people? What is actually valuable? So we basically wrote a bullet list of what are features for an agency. And we just went through those and that's now our agency plan. And then the other thing we're going to do is launch a partners page. So we can list individual agencies and partners on a page on our site and then give badges based on how many customers they send our way and that we're working on together. So you'll get like a Cartook badge once you get like 3 customers on the platform, and you'll get some like platinum thing once you get 5. Or we're just trying to think through all these incentives on like, you know, a lot of the agencies would love a link from our site. They see us as like the platform, and all of a sudden that helps them with credibility. And then what we've done is created 2 PDFs, one PDF for the agency that explains the agency plan and the benefits and what we can do for their customers and explanation of how to do things. And then the other PDF we created was to give to the agency that they can very easily just forward on to their customer. So when their customer says, well, okay, I'm interested in hearing more about this Cartook thing, what is it? Instead of putting that task on the agency, we just said, just here's the PDF, you can give it. And it's oriented differently. It's oriented for the end customer. So it talks about the benefits and the features and integrations and what it can do for them. That way, we're just trying to make it as easy as possible on the agencies. You know, this is like the type of stuff. And I think I'll be able to report back next week on how it went and how it felt and what I would do.
I definitely want to hear. Yeah. Even like long term, I want to hear how the agency stuff goes, because like I've seen some companies do really well with some sort of agency reseller kind of plan. And we have like a small segment of clients on Audience Ops who are agencies. We don't have like an official, we do work with them. We have some programs, some incentives for them, but like nothing really official or that we promote. And then with Ops Calendar, clearly one of the plans is aimed at agencies. And I've seen like mixed results. Like even back in Restaurant Engine, I had very mixed results where we would have agencies, and I've heard this from other people too, like agencies really excited about it. They want to resell it to their customers, but then they just can't get customers to sign up.
Yes. You know? You never know if it's a waste of time.
Yeah. Because of that experience with Restaurant Engine, where I invested a lot of time and effort into that, and then to get like almost no payoff, I've been so hesitant to spend any time on it in my current businesses. But sometimes I feel like I should be spending more. You know?
Right. So we have some evidence that there's opportunity there, but we don't know where it'll go. So we're doing like what we're effectively saying is a limited experiment. But we have maybe 10%, 10 to 15% of our entire customer base was brought on by an agency. So we have 4 or 5 agencies that have like 3, 4, 5 clients each. So there's something there we just can't tell. So we're just going to kind of sniff around it and see what we can do to encourage it and see if it works. My goal, speaking of ClickFunnels, is so ClickFunnels has agencies that have turned themselves into ClickFunnels agencies. And yeah, that's
like that Cartook certified.
Exactly right. So yeah, that's like the end goal. If we can create this ecosystem around our platform, that's the end goal. And I think that the evidence I'm looking for that we're heading in that direction is when I see agencies popping up that like are Cartook agencies. So that we're not quite there yet. We're at the point now where some of our agency partners include us as their normal. Like when they send out a proposal, like what they'll do for you is I'll set up your Shopify store, I'll create 3 landing pages, and I'll connect it to 3 funnels in Cartook. So it's like part of their proposal. So that's like a step in the right direction. And the next step is like we specialize in Cartook, and we're not there yet.
Very cool. Love it.
Yeah. You want to talk? Otherwise, I was going to talk about the giving presentation at conference, which is a different, slightly different topic.
Yeah, go for it. So what's the topic?
Okay, so the topic I'm thinking of is about how we do content marketing, which is like the last topic that I would expect of myself, because I haven't done content marketing before. I wasn't really a believer in it. You and I have talked about the whole audience building thing ad nauseum over the past few years. So where we have settled is on this very cynical ROI-driven approach to content marketing. We do content marketing predominantly, not exclusively, but predominantly as ammunition for paid advertising. And I think it could be interesting to go through how we do that and how we marry our content writer with our marketer, and they work together. One creates the content, one promotes it. And then that free content acts as the initial starting point for a visitor. So it's an ad that goes to free content and then the retargeting funnel of advertisements that happen over the next few weeks after you've hit our page. That's really why we're doing it, so that you get into the retargeting and then those ads are actually action steps in terms right. of like a buy button,
start a trial.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Get into a webinar, video, so deeper in. So we've kind of been able to do this over the past few weeks and it's working, because I think it's something to teach. I don't want to talk about myself. I want something useful.
I mean, I can't wait to hear it. I know that audience will eat it up. So,
right. Every time I've heard about content marketing, I've heard it in this like give value and generate, create an audience. And that always sounded A, daunting, and B, hard to rise above all the great content out there.
Like, this is something that I need to probably communicate better with audience ops, because our best clients tend to think of it that way.
They want ROI.
Yeah, I mean, all clients want ROI, but the ones who stick around the longest with us, and we've had a bunch on board like for 3 years now, a lot of them are doing paid traffic to the articles that were in the lead magnets that we do for them. So a lot of them just do that. So that's one way of looking at it. But then the other way to look at it, I believe, and this also ties back to paid, is the back end, right? Like, everybody wants to say like, oh, I published this blog post and that blog post resulted in X new customers for my business. Like, it really doesn't work like that. You might get some, but it doesn't really work. Like content is a benefit to be a top of funnel, build up those retargeting lists, like have something to run paid traffic to. But then on the back end, if you're running any sort of campaign, what, 5%, 5 to 10% will convert right away. 90% don't. They're going to be around later, hopefully. And you need that content to keep them around and keep them coming back and reactivate them after the first campaign. They just weren't, like, timing wise, they were off. But if they opted in for the thing early on and then 3 months later, they're ready, having something to send to their inbox every week, that's where the back end ROI comes from. Again, like, that's getting ROI from your paid campaigns. I'm like monetizing that 90% who don't convert on the first run of the paid campaign, you know?
Yeah, we've talked about this before in terms of email strategy, where the content keeps people around and then the product and feature updates is what gets people to take action in terms of starting a free trial. I think that's what I want to talk about. We have direct experience with it right now. We're in the middle of this like 6 week campaign that has been planned out so cynically, but it's content marketing, right? It's like, okay, blog post one is going to be about the market. Blog post two is going to be about like a smaller part of the market. Blog post three is going to be about our own feature. Blog post four is going to be about another big feature. And then blog post five is going to be announcing a webinar to talk about it. And then number six is going to be a case study. And it's like, okay, each one gets published on Monday and gets promoted for the entire week. And then another one drops on Monday. And then Monday, so it's almost like a barrage of content to build up this retargeting audience, all in anticipation of, and now we're doing a webinar. So like that audience is as big as possible, that we have the pixel ready for retargeting. And then all at once we can flip, everybody will get promoted the webinar. And then everybody gets promoted the case study, the things that actually convert people. That's what I think I'm going to talk about. And what I found was an article by Dan Andrews, 15-minute guide, how to create a conference presentation. And it's just this super useful blog post with a video, a 15-minute video, and then just like slide format. I'm not going to follow it exactly to a T, but just what really helped me in that blog post was just how to make sure, how do you make what you're talking about useful? Because that's what people like, right? They came to conference not to hear about how awesome you are, to hear about what you're doing and to learn this stuff.
Yeah. And Dan knows a thing or two about running conferences.
Right. And he wrote it from a very humble point of view. He was like, when I started, I was super nervous. And after doing it a while, this is like what I came up with to make sure that it's useful. Just going through his process and making sure that you're telling it as a story, but also addressing problems and solutions, problem and solution, problem and solution. And then here are common mistakes that we made that you can avoid. And here's what you can do right now to get started on it. Like that's what I want to hear.
Another good point about making a presentation, I heard Patrick Campbell. So I just spoke to him recently on the Productize podcast as well, but I heard him on a different podcast, I forgot which one. You kind of lay out the main point, the thesis, like the argument in the first 2 minutes of the speech. And the rest of the hour is convince people that that's true. Convince people why that, like everything else supports that first argument, you know, like whatever that thing is. It's rather than just like lay out a whole, like a lesson plan on something, think about it more like capture their attention with this kind of bold argument of some kind, some big new concept. And then you keep their attention because they're skeptical at first, and then you need to convince them the rest of the time.
Right. And as you're going and showing. Yeah, the funny thing is that it's really hard to connect ROI with content, but doing it in this way, we actually have an easy way to measure. We know what people's first touch point was, and then we can see when they signed up. I can like run through the ROI and I can show here's how much we paid in salaries and here's how much we paid in promotion. And this is the number of trials that it created. And this is the amount of MRR that it created. It is a paid marketing campaign that content is necessary in order to make it effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
And that Dan Andrews thing, I was like, okay, I went from like, oh my God, what am I going to talk about to, okay, I think I have not only a topic that's worthwhile and valuable to other people, but now some confidence in the, okay, I can figure out how to make a presentation useful as opposed to just like, you know, telling what we did.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll just talk about Ops Calendar real quick. Cause you know, it's just continuously on my mind, obviously. And I'm thinking through a lot of the big next steps to where to go with it throughout the rest of this year. I got some really good feedback from folks at Big Snow Tiny Conf this year. So we talked a few weeks back about how I initially, for a few months at the end of last year, I forced everybody on the marketing site to go to request a demo. Like you signing up for a free trial was just not available. You have to get on a call with me and then I'll give you the trial sign up. And then I turned that off so that now people can sign up for a free trial. There's still an option to do a demo, but nobody does that. Everybody just goes straight to the trial. That's been the case for the last like 3 or 4 months now. And we're getting actually a lot of trials now. I'm actually pretty surprised that we're getting about one or two a day, just organically. We did a bunch of content in the end of 2017, which I think is doing well with SEO and the marketing side is doing pretty well. And I did some tactics with Quora and a couple other things and directory sites and just some like low-hanging fruit stuff that's bringing more traffic, and I'm happy with that, but I haven't been like actively focused on it, and I haven't been active on like the trial to paid conversion. We get some people converting to paid, but not nearly enough. Not that I magically expected that to happen. I know that it takes a lot of work, and there's still plenty of stuff that we have yet to put in place, like onboarding things. But these last few months, getting all these signups. I have a drip email that does ask them to get on a call. And then occasionally I'll just manually email people, try to get on a call. And I still feel like out of touch. I've had a few calls with customers over the last couple of months, not nearly as many as I did before. So now I'm thinking about just switching that back, just going back to the force the demo, you know, I used to get a lot of emails like, oh, can I just skip the demo? I just want to sign up for it. And, you know, but I just have to talk to more customers. That's the thing. So yeah, like I'm probably going to make that change in the next week or so and just get back into the habit of doing a bunch of demo calls every week, a few a week. And I think that'll just be good to get closer to the customer again. I feel like there's a lot of activity in the app, but I'm not talking to enough people.
That's it. Just a few weeks and you already feel out of touch.
Yeah. And I, you know what it is? It's like, I don't really know for sure, like which features are the most, I have an idea of which features are most important. We have a couple of features that we built that nobody's using. It's mainly the checklists and the automation of the assigning checklists and due dates and have it revolve around your calendar. And it is focused on like marketers and running content and syncing with your blog and social media, and it can do all that stuff. But from a positioning and market focus standpoint, it's also like a process tool and like an operations tool. And like,
what are you finding is like the main reason people sign up?
I'm seeing both, you know, I'm seeing marketers just come to it for like a content calendar, social media scheduling tool, which it very much is. And I'm seeing a lot of the same people, but also just other people who are running organizations and teams who, like, a lot of the feedback is like it's kind of like a Gantt chart without the crappy Gantt chart. Like, it does the same stuff of having a checklist adapt to due dates on the calendar.
Yeah, and multiple things going on at the same time.
Yeah, and like dependencies and that kind of, like, it does all that stuff, and you can like automatically assign people on your team every time you add something to a calendar, all that kind of stuff. So, and I'm getting feedback from Productize members who are looking for process tools, because that's very much about systems and processes and recurring tasks and all that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to think through, and this is why I need to talk to more customers, is like I'm trying to think through like who is the ideal customer for this, what's the ideal use case, and then there's the whole agency side of it too, is like content agencies, marketing agencies using it as a tool to power their clients' campaigns. I feel like that side of it, there is interest, but I need to do more active outreach to agencies, whereas the marketers just tend to find it. And I think that side tends to be just signing up organically. The agencies, the few that I do talk to are really excited about it and they see it as a good alternative. They could drop some other tools that they don't like, but I need to do more outbound outreach to get, like, they're not necessarily going to search and find it the way that marketers are just finding it. And then the other big thing on my mind right now is the developers. I don't really know where I'm going to go with this, to be honest.
Okay. This is a recurring problem in all founder circles that I'm involved in. It's everywhere. It's hard. That's it.
It's hard, and this is self-funded, so I am limited by cash. I mean, Ops Calendar is losing money every month. Like, it's not break even at this point. So what I need is a lead developer. That's what I need. I have two developers, and I feel like neither of them is a lead developer. One of them has been on the project longer than the other. They're both good coders. They execute the features. They've built the bulk of the app. They ship features. They communicate fairly well, but I've been having issues with their availability. Like, one guy's been tied up with personal issues, kind of like a chronic ongoing thing, which has been very, very frustrating. Like, literally, like, taking his hours from like 30 down to like 5 a week, and I'm just like, just do 30. I need you for 30, you know, like, you know, just stuff like that. That's been super frustrating. But larger than that, the thing that I actually need is somebody to go in between me and the junior developer or developers. Like I'm very much the product manager, and I want to continue doing that. I'm doing the design, the front end, planning the features, understanding what customers need and where we should prioritize features. Like, I'm managing the product. I could talk about technical challenges when you explain to me the technical challenges, but I don't know. I can't code Laravel and Vue and PHP. Like, I only really can code HTML and CSS.
And the decision making that goes on before actually coding, the scoping and estimating and
the architectural planning, like, and there are things in the app that are functional today, but they are slow and buggy and and intertwined with so many other things that I know that I could, just from using the app, I could tell that certain things were fundamentally, architecturally, just not as good as they could be. And if I had a lead developer who really owned it, who like owned that, those decisions.
Yeah. But it sounds like it's either a co-founder or it's a full-time employee, but both of which are hard.
I know.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I went the co-founder route and then Ben ran that for a long time. And that's what allowed us to do anything.
I'm talking to different people about that. And like, I'm trying to figure out kind of what my priorities are and how much I want to invest into this person and into this position and into the product as a whole. I do intend to continue pushing and growing on the product, but I am a multi-product kind of person. Like, it's not my full-time thing. And so it's like, how much of my overall business am I going to invest into this? And how much should I expect of somebody else to be invested into this? And like, and then of course the cash flow constraints and like what I'm spending now versus what I would need to spend to get this level of person, and where would they need to be based? And I'm also thinking through like, maybe it can be like somebody comes on full time for a month or two to do like a complete audit and a big strategy session. And then after that, it's a part-time basis. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think through different options and I don't really know where I'm going to land on that. But I do know that the pace of development and I think the overall, I'll say quality, like under the hood quality is not where I would like it to be. The customer base needs to get higher for me to really feel comfortable in investing heavily into it. That's as well. But
the chicken and egg piece.
Yeah. So it's a question of like timing and what exactly I want to do about it. So,
yeah, I think that's one of the hardest puzzles to kind of unlock as a non-technical founder. It is, you know, if you are technical, you can kind of decide how much do I want to invest in this of my own work. But if you're not technical and that option doesn't exist, then you have to figure out the puzzle. How do you incentivize someone? How do you pay someone? How do you find someone? How do you make it work?
Like I said, we're getting organic trial signups every day. And I know that most of these are actually not coming from my audience. Some are, but a lot of them are not.
Right. And that tells you you're heading in the right direction. Right. So it's like these little confidence building steps.
Yeah. Like there's interest in it. There's people actively searching for a tool like this. But I still need to do more work around like, all right, exactly which problem solution, product market fit kind of stuff do I need to really put all of our eggs into which basket? I'm trying to figure that out. And
the way I did it is I got to the same point you are. The developer I worked with originally, Charlie, was really strong. And so the initial product was thin, but it was really well built. So it did not have a lot of features, really limited features, but it worked well for what it did. And then just those first, 30 maybe customers, that's really what was used in order to attract someone of Ben's caliber.
Yeah.
Because then it was like, look, there's something here. And if you jumped on board and we both kind of went in our own lanes, then it would grow a lot faster. But what would we say to a young person with less experience that came and said, how do I attract a good developer? We'd say, find a way to make it attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
It's similar.
Yeah, you know, and I do think about your story from like the first year of Cardhook, and I expect it would be something along those lines. Like, and I think I'm getting kind of close to that point where it's like, okay, I know that at some point everything kind of needs to be upgraded in some way. We'll see. So that's,
we'll see.
I, you know, it's not something that I'm going to figure out in the next week or two, but it's just on my mind, and I got to. Priority number one is just to get more customers and talk to more customers and really let that fuel everything else.
But you never know. You never know who's listening. Right? Sounds like an opportunity to me. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Well, we got to call it. I got to get some lunch. I got to go to my law firm today. I don't know what's going on. It's Friday.
Good luck with that.
Yes. Cool. It's great to catch up, my man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
See ya. All right. See everybody.